Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we are still going through the amendments to the Articles of Confederation, and we've got Paul back with us, and it sounds like you've already unmuted. You're anticipatory on that.
Yes. On that I am ready this time. I was waiting.
That's good. So it's okay. One of the things that is really important, because most people, and this actually gives me, a real pause. And, is this person serious? When I hear somebody say, we need to go back to the Articles of Confederation.
I've heard that.
And these people don't understand how inept these things were.
And yeah, I've heard people say not only that, but they quote the Articles of Confederation as if they were such an amazing thing. And I wonder if English is their first language.
Well, so I honestly think that, they've never read them, because almost everybody I've talked to, I talk to people all the time that, talk about how important the Constitution is. And I go, well, what about this in the Constitution? And they go, well, I didn't know that. And, and it come to find out they've never read it. So I appreciate the fact that somewhere, somehow, they have, placed this huge credence in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. But good gads, read the thing, understand why it's so important. Don't just, be a yes man. I mean, there will always be sycophants out there. That, this is what we need to do. Okay. And they don't think for themselves. There'll always be those. But what we need are leaders. And, if you're going to stand up, make sure you have some good footing, so that if you're going to say, we got to go in this direction, you're prepared to actually explain why and, what's so important about it. Anyway, we're in an amendment process, and these are the amendments that have been proposed to the Articles of Confederation. And these particular amendments that we're going through is literally the amendments that they kind of disclosed. We kind of created this government and we didn't realize that we needed to do some certain things. And so, it's kind of like, we're going to go camping and we're going to, build a fire. And we didn't bring the matches.
Right.
That one thing you actually have to do. Right. And so.
Correct.
That was the intent of these very specific amendments, because they go through this long list. And I want to pick it back up from the eighth item on the list, because one of the things that they've already kind of lent to the importance. And folks, the reason why I want to reread this is because they realized how important the oath of office was. As a matter of fact, when we get into the Bill of Rights and some of the first acts, that's one of the things we're going to get into next after we resolve, these amendments and the formation of the Constitutional Convention, because we have to actually go across the threshold of whether the Constitutional Convention was done in a haphazard way that required a runaway convention, or provide a little analysis to the fact of whether it really was a runaway convention or not. Because there are people out there, there are organizations out there that are puffing up their chest, claiming that this constitutional convention was a runaway convention, that, you know, this was just, and I'm telling you, the Articles of Association, if there was anything haphazardly done, it was these.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finished with, I mean, when you really think about the amendments that they created in the first decade, let's actually go 15 years.
Okay.
That takes us to the 12th Amendment. So okay. The only amendment that they found that they really, something they didn't think about, but actually it wasn't something they didn't think about, because the Bill of Rights themselves was something that they said, we don't need these. We have an enumerated constitution. We don't have to worry about them taking away our freedom of speech. It is not enumerated. We don't have to worry about them going into the realms of religion. It is not enumerated. You okay?
Yes, I'm okay.
Okay.
I know what happened.
Okay. All right. So,
go ahead.
Sorry about that, folks. So when we look at, you know, how they justified the Constitution, it was constantly being justified that we didn't need a Bill of Rights. So the only other two amendments, because the Bill of Rights became frosting. It's not that they were important, but because people felt that we needed to have them, the Bill of Rights did give us some important delineations, like the 10th Amendment, the 9th Amendment, and others that actually have really played out to be very important at the time of the Civil War, where states were proven to be so tyrannical, they were killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other two amendments that were taken on, and the first amendment other than the Bill of Rights, which was the 11th Amendment, when we go through the ratification debates, when we go through those this year, we'll point it out. We pointed it out last year that they were very concerned with the federal jurisdiction over cases between a person, a non-resident of one state, suing a resident or a state that they don't reside in. And they said, we got a problem with that. That this gives you the ability to poke your nose into our affairs and business. So out the gate, as soon as the federal government actually, you know, stepped into that, the state said, we want an amendment on this. And they got it. They didn't convene a convention. As a matter of fact, the Congress quickly stepped up and said, yeah, okay, we'll give you that amendment. Folks, the majority of all amendments, as I go through these, the majority of all amendments were driven by the states. So if we need an amendment today, then why would we need a constitutional convention?
Sure.
Congress will give us that. I mean, these calls and cries for term limits, we even see in their day they were calling for term limits. And they said there's no necessity for that.
Right.
And people go, well, we got this runaway government. Well, term limits have nothing to do whether your government, your public servants are abiding by their oath or not.
Hey, G.R.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've got a runaway government in Missouri, and we've got term limits. So you're right. It's whether or not they're abiding by their oath, which is something I brought up recently in a meeting at the legislature yesterday.
Yes, 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 yes. You know what? I want to talk about that. And so let me finish this, and we can talk about that, and then we can move into this.
Okay.
It is very clear, folks, that when you have a runaway government, when government is doing things, they're overreaching, they're assuming powers that are not delegated. The process isn't saying, oh, well, because we have a self-government. Your job is to keep your government in check. And when government is no longer staying within the boundaries, no longer staying in check, then whose job is, oh, well, we want an amendment just so we can make sure that nobody can stay. That doesn't stop the problem of government functioning outside of the boundaries of the Constitution. It doesn't change that at all.
right?
The only thing that'll change government from doing things that they have no authority to do is when you stand up and petition them and say, you can't do these things. That's what you have to do. So don't think the term limits is some, you know, silver bullet that's going to kill your werewolf. It doesn't, and it won't. None of the amendments that have ever been entertained that the convention of state folks are trying to bring forward and the amendments today, balanced budget amendments, what have you, none of those amendments are silver bullets at all. And actually, they cause more problems. Why would we just haphazardly throw amendments at it other than the fact that these idiots, or I should say these megalomaniacs like Mark Levin, all he wants is he wants to go down in the annals of history that one of his amendments got attached to that document. I mean, would that not be a historical point that your amendment? So one of his liberty amendments might be thrown up there. And to me, folks, that's not the right reason why we would amend the Constitution. Right? So it's not about, you know, whether you want to go down in history because, you know, you had an amendment. Thomas Jefferson wrote an amendment. It didn't get attached.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you went to speak at a committee meeting. I think it was a committee meeting at the legislature. So how did that go? Well, we got 12 minutes, so maybe you can keep it under that.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I can keep it under 12 minutes. So many of the states have initiative petition process for changing their constitutions. This happened in Ohio in November, in which they enshrined abortion into the state constitution. That is coming to Missouri. We've got somewhere between 11 and 17 initiative petitions for pro-abortion, and we've got about two or three of them for gun restrictions. And so there are a group of Missouri senators who think it's our highest, who feel strongly it's our highest priority to have initiative petition reform, to change the process. It's so important to them that they've essentially put this, they've actually brought the business of the Senate to a halt, kind of, because they want to put this front and center. So there are about 11 of these resolutions that were proposed to the local government elections committee.
Right. So can I interject real quick?
Yeah.
Because some of these problems and solutions are actually a little more simpler than we think.
Right.
One of the things that you did that I'm going to just kind of lead forward and expose to the audience is that you actually provided a map of how one of the last elections, or I should say initiatives, amendments, how it was ratified, how an amendment was ratified by 10 counties out of how many counties? 100?
In Missouri, it was there were two maps. In Missouri, there were 15 counties out of 114. But in Ohio, there was 15 out of 114 counties.
Okay.
That was an 86% no.
Out of right. In other words, the counties would have stopped the abortion in Ohio. It's the same thing where, so the whole point is that you actually used a graphic of showing where, you know, the power of voting is coming from, and it's coming from population centers.
Correct.
And so,
and I pointed that out. Yes.
So one of the things that I think we need to actually, you know, really start exposing is the fact of how many legislators were in the state house back at the beginning of the century. And I don't mean, you know, year 2000, the 20th century. In other words, in 1900, how many legislators and senators were there that represented the people, and what was the population of Missouri at that point in time? Because I'm going to be very confident that the number of seats have not changed. They've only watered down representation. And so in the 1960s, the Warren Court felt that one of the only solution was to actually shift everything towards a democracy and to improve representation. Because they were saying there's this huge disparity in representation because we have a landlock in our chambers on seats. We can only have so many legislators. That today doesn't fly anymore. There's no reason why they can't expand government. The reason why we need to actually look at expanding government and reducing government at the same time is expanding our representation and reducing pay. They don't need to be making the money that they're making. They're doing things and they're involved in things that they have no business being involved in. The federal government comes along and mandates you need to interface with our Environmental Protection Agency. You need to do all of these things. And we're just running around like chickens with our heads cut off because they're just literally sending us down all of these goose chases. And so bottom line, if you restored proper representation in Missouri and the rest of these states, you could actually have the representation you need. And if you restored your true Republican, because Republican form of government is one representation of the people and the sovereigns. So if you restored representation to the counties, because right now your Senate can't even accommodate how many counties you have.
Right. You're correct.
And so the whole point is that as populations grow, we institute new governments, and those new governments need to be respected in the Senate. That's the way our legislative system is to be working. And bottom line, let's just get rid of the Senate. If we're not going to have bicameral legislation, then we should actually just get rid of the Senate. And then all the senators would go, well, we can't do that. Because obviously, if we're just representing the people, we only need the House. But right. The unique thing about America, and see, the senators make more money. They have more greater responsibilities, and they've got a 4-year term instead of a 2.
A 6-year term.
Oh, in Missouri, it's a 6-year term?
Oh, no, I apologize. Yes, a 4-year term.
Okay.
A 4-year term in Senate. My apologies.
So, okay, so anyway, back to your comments, your report. I honestly think that, this, you really need to have a round table. These people need to actually get their heads out of their backsides, pull their heads out of their butts, and actually have a really open and honest conversation. How can we serve the people instead of ruling the people?
Right. And, in one sense, GR, you said legislators in Missouri don't make a lot. I mean, I don't even think they make about $30,000 a year. And so look at this combination. So with term limits and getting them, what they're paid, it's sometimes seats go vacant because they can get a job as a lobbyist and make more. They're constantly, as the end of their term comes, the last year, they're focused on what's going to happen next.
Right.
All right. I almost think that they should get, first we should take money out of politics. Secondly, we probably should pay them more. We had this discussion before. These are the folks that make the laws, that attorneys make a lot of money, in court. Defending or opposing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And so we probably ought to consider that, and the way things go, because a lot of these people put their businesses aside you know, during the time that they're in, if they haven't, during the time that they're in office. Just something to consider.
But yeah, anyway. But, you know, isn't it a self-licking ice cream cone when you have lawyers actually making laws that they get to play with? They get to go into court and play with?
We know the cool thing about Missouri, and this is true in Idaho, is these folks are your neighbors. All of them aren't lawyers. Okay. Now, I encountered one yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, but the lawyers are usually the ones that actually screw things up, like the one you encountered yesterday. So now we have 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, we had I had the opportunity to testify, and I actually only had a minute. I wrote a document which I shared with you, and I didn't get to read from that. So I only had time to explain why this should be modeled, the state should be modeled after the U.S. Constitution. And the lawyer in the room challenged me. And it was really interesting because she got into a tiff with me, and I think she didn't understand. When I use the term ratification, it threw her for a loop. Okay?
Yeah, right.
I can't even explain how this conversation went. It's just that what the sponsor of this legislation wanted to achieve was concurrent majority ratification, which is not just a majority of the people voting, but a majority of the legislative districts, the House districts.
Well, so that doesn't change that much, though.
It doesn't change
that much, and I say that because you have a huge majority of your legislative districts in your population centers because it's all based on population.
So the document I put together was to suggest counties. That wasn't in the proposal. It was just an overview and saying, here's what I think you should do.
Yeah, so let me just slide this in here. You happen to know a lawyer that likes to create constitutional challenges that, I've not necessarily been at odds with, but I don't really know where they're coming from. But here's an opportunity for this lawyer,
okay,
to actually challenge a Republican form of government because bottom line, we the people, it is a foundation of how we function as a government. We the people institute our governments. We have created county governments, and and our state government has absolutely ignored them. And we have to restore our county governments so that we actually have county representation in the Senate instead of people representation. The whole point of bicameral legislation was to recognize and represent the sovereigns, which is why there is a guarantee in the U.S. Constitution of the state's suffrage in the Senate. And there needs to be a guarantee of county suffrage in the state Senate. And until you restore the suffrage of the county, because it comes down to that, representation is about suffrage. It's about your representatives casting votes on your behalf. And the county and the people in their respective houses should have their representation actually represent them, not go and rule them like this senator that you're talking to.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is the conversation that I think it's about basically handing them a couple of pictures, because pictures can actually say lots of things as soon as these folks look at it. And I think if you gave them three pictures, one that speaks of why we have, you know, representation is for the suffrage and, you know, this foundation of instituting government. We the people institute government, and how dare that state ignore the actual governments that created it? That state is in existence because of the counties. Now, we just ran out of time. So with that, we are going to go to a break. It'll be a quick promo, folks, and we'll come back and we're going to pick this back up. I'll let Paul make some final comments on on his trip report, and then we'll move forward into these amendments and these functioning things that they needed in the Articles of Confederation. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so, Paul, I'm sorry, I injected some stuff, but in a summary of your trip, success, no success, what?
Success comes with the written communication, because the verbal communication, you know, as time dwindled,
yeah,
it just wasn't optimum.
It's always going to be that way.
Yeah. I actually believe that one of these proposals will get out with a due pass. There were several of them. I don't know. There are 163 House districts, and the Senator Mike Moon, who's proposal I testified for, seems to be the best one. But the only reason I think it will get out of committee is because there's a narrow Republican majority. I will be surprised if it doesn't. So we'll see. I don't know yet.
Right.
They didn't vote yesterday,
right,
because it went right up to the time that they had to get on the floor.
Right.
By the way, it was a packed meeting. Packed. And there was a lot of opposition because – especially by lobbying groups, because they want majority rule.
So one of the things that next time you go to a committee meeting, mm-hmm, I would just recommend that you print out all of our petitions and have copies of them, you know, for everybody there that is a legislator, and say, these are active petitions. And if you want to start talking about, you know, where you stand on being eligible to be a public servant, and these things right here are the true litmus test, because if you're not standing up against this tyranny, then you have no business being in office. And as you're handing them out, you should be saying that as you're looking at that one senator, because that senator thinks that, you know, you're immune. You can violate the Constitution. You can do anything you want because you are a ruler in this monarchy.
That seems to be – somehow that seems to be the idea. And they seem to act that way.
Yes, yes. Sadly.
Right.
Okay, so back to the constitutional amendments, or the amendments of the Confederation. I wanted to start off with, because they talk about instituting oaths and emoluments and so forth, and clearly these are things that were included into the Constitution that they didn't think about having within the Articles of Confederation.
Right.
So let's start there, and then boom, because as we go through these, they're identifying things that go, you know, we need to be doing this. We need to be doing, you know, these things. Go ahead.
Okay, so number eight. Mm-hmm. By instituting an oath to be taken by the officers of the U.S. or any of them against presents, emoluments, office or title of any kind from a king, prince, or foreign state. Okay, as we're reading through these,
yes,
by the way,
uh-huh,
they're all familiar.
Yes.
So
go
okay
ahead.
So nine, by one universal plan of equipping, training, and governing the militia. 10, by a scheme for estimating the value of all land within each state granted to or surveyed for any person or persons together with the buildings and improvements thereon, and the appointment of certain periods at which payments shall be made.
Right, and this is where we went down that long discussion over sales tax, property tax, and or income tax.
Right.
Because you could tell that they, under the Articles of Confederation, they were assessing property taxes.
Okay.
Because that's why they needed to have this assessor appointed for every state, because they needed to know the value of everybody's property. Go ahead.
Right. Okay.
Establishing rules, so we're on 11.
Captures on land and the distribution of the states. So rules for captures on land and the distribution of the states. What do they mean by distribution of the states?
It says, and, at least my document says, a distribution of the sales.
I'm sorry, that's what it says.
Okay.
Distribution of the sales. So captures on land and the distribution of the sales. What do they mean? What are they talking about?
This has to do with goods. This has to do with capturing, you know, things that are coming in that have been imported. That they're talking about, you know, have they assessed the imposts on these things?
Okay, because when it says captures, the first thing that comes to mind is war. You know, are
uh-huh
they? And so even for the audience, that just has a connotation that I think needs to be clarified. They understood it, but now we've got an audience 2.5 centuries later that probably ought to have an idea what's going
on. Yeah, so I'm thinking this is more in the line of commerce than it is mm-hmm as a process of marquees and those types of things. But anyway,
okay. Now we've got
12.
By ascertaining the jurisdiction of Congress in territorial questions. By 13, by erecting a mint. 14, by fixing a standard of weights and measures throughout the U.S. 15, by appointing a committee for Indian affairs. 16, by regulating the post office. 17, by establishing a census of white inhabitants in each state. 18, by publishing the Journal of Congress monthly. 19, by registering seamen. That's S-E-A-M-E-N. 20, by liquidation of old accounts against the U.S. And 21, by providing means of animadverting on delinquent states. That is a word. Is that a spelling? Or is that a real word?
I don't know. I'm going to presume it's an archaic word. I'd have to look it up. But anyway,
right.
So
it's animadverting,
yeah,
which I have never seen before. Okay.
Okay. Right.
So those are the 21.
Uh huh.
And now there's some more. You want me to continue?
Yes, please. Yeah.
All right. Resolve that the preceding articles, the 9th, be referred to the Board of War, the 13th, 14th, and 16th, to the superintendent of finance and the others to committee, in order that the subject matter there may be extended in detail for the consideration of Congress. So they are pushing these off to committees now. And your committee further report that as America became a Confederate republic to crush the present and future foes of her independence, as of this republic, a general council is a necessary organ, and without the extension of its power in the cases herein after enumerated, war may receive a fatal inclination and peace be exposed to daily convulsions. It be resolved, I think the resolved, to recommend to the several states to authorize the U.S. Congress and U.S. in Congress assembled. 1. To lay embargoes in time of war without any limitation. 2. to prescribe rules for impressing property into the service of the U.S. during the present war. 3, to appoint the collectors of and direct the mode of accounting for taxes imposed according to the requisitions of Congress. 4, to recognize the independence of and admit into the Federal Union any part of one or more of the U.S. with the consent of the dismembered state. I think that's turning territories into states.
That is correct.
Okay. 5, to stipulate in treaties with foreign nations for the establishment of consular power without reference to the states individually. 6, to distrain the property of a state delinquent in its assigned proportion of men and money. 7, to vary the rules of suffrage in Congress, taking care that in questions for waging war, granting matters of mark and reprisal in time of peace, concluding or giving instructions for any alliance, coining money, regulating the value of coin, determining the total number of land and sea forces, and allocating to each state its quota of men or money, emitting bills of credit, borrowing money, fixing the number and force of vessels of war, and appointing a commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy. At least 2/3 of the U.S. shall agree therein. That's a question mark.
Uh-huh.
Resolved that a committee be appointed to prepare a presentation to the several states of the necessity of these supplemental powers and of pursuing in the modification of one uniform plan. That sounds like a call for a convention right there.
So, yes, but they didn't have the power to do that. These were just recommendations that they were sending out because, again, the amendment process and the convention was controlled by the states.
Okay.
So that's why when you look at the Constitutional Convention, who funded the delegates being there? Where did the money come from for that convention to happen?
That's a good question. Did it come from the states?
Yes, the states paid the delegates their compensation, or they basically reimbursed them for their time. I mean, they weren't... these men that went to this convention basically all boarded in a room, not all at once, but I mean as groups. So in other words, the Virginia delegates probably rented 2 rooms and they all stayed within, 2 or 3 men a room.
Okay.
In other words, they didn't go into a hotel like we have today where everybody has their own private accommodations. There were no private accommodations for these men. The states were funding this.
Okay.
And so I believe that the states ended up having to fund or flip the bill for the rental of Independence Hall.
Okay.
So the financing of the convention, because the Continental Congress or this what they called a federal government or the general government didn't have the ability to pay for it. It wasn't in their control. So,
right.
So as we wrap up this one, and oh, by the way, when was this amendment, basically, these recommendations sent out?
Let's see. The date on this is 22 August 1781.
Yeah, so 5 months after the ratification of the Articles of Confederation, they expose the fact that we have all of these problems.
Right.
And that we need to do these things for us to be effective. And because we need unanimity in the ratification process, guess what?
We need to do something more than we've done, right?
Well, right. So what this means is that they now, are basically inept, or they're confessing that the government that was formed is inept.
Right.
And that we need to do these very specific things.
Right.
Okay, so the next one, the fourth one is the grant of temporary power to collect imports and duties.
Okay, let me get there.
And so this one actually shows up 2 years later. And so this is when they finally came out to say, okay, money talks, and you know what walks, so we need money. Show us the money.
Okay, hang on. Grant?
Yep, this is grant of temporary power to collect import duties.
There it is, 18 April 1783.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. Go ahead. So, again, this is 2 years after. So they realized that they couldn't do hardly anything, that they, you know, they really needed some, you know, to be empowered to do these things. The states basically didn't respond. They didn't give them the power to do these things. And so 2 years into this, they realized that, okay, so we spent all this money to fight this war, and now we need money from you to basically, you know, to repay those. Yeah, so right. Here you go. This is what they send out.
Okay. Grant a temporary power to collect import duties and request for supplementary funds 18 April 1783. Resolved by 9 states that it be recommended to the several states as indispensably necessary to the restoration of public credit and to the punctual and honorable discharge of the public debts to invest the United States and Congress assembled with a power to levy for the use of the United States the following duties upon goods imported into the said states from any foreign port, island, or plantation. So what they're doing apparently is saying, we need to collect money, and this is how we need to do it.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So upon all rum of Jamaica proof per gallon, 4/90 of a dollar. Okay. Upon all other spirituous liquors, 3/90 of a dollar. Upon Madeira wine, 12/90. Other wines, 6/90. Upon common Bohia tea per pound, 6/90. Upon all other teas, 24/90. Upon pepper per pound, 3/90. Brown sugar per pound, 1/2/90. Loaf sugar, 2/90. Upon all other sugars, 1/90. Upon molasses per gallon, 1/90. Upon cocoa and coffee per pound, 1/90. Upon all.
Okay, let me stop right there. So you're saying 90th. Folks, let's just play with 100th. So 4 okay. cents on the dollar, 3 cents on the dollar, 12 cents on the dollar, 6 cents on the dollar. So that's what they were looking at, you know, these mm-hmm. taxes. And so there's one on brown sugar, 0.5 cent on the dollar.
Right.
So, I mean, what were some of the Stamp Act taxes? I mean, when they put that, it was 0.5%, 0.1%.
Right. 0.1%
on tea. And right. So Britain was, you know, they were able to do this funding, and they were applying these taxations. Now we see that this government is in such need that their taxation level is really high.
Right. Really high.
Really high.
Yeah, okay.
Upon all other teas, 24 cents on the dollar.
You're right. They must have gotten most of their tea from Great Britain.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So next paragraph, upon all other goods, a duty of 5% ad valorem at the time and place of importation. Any idea what ad valorem is? I could look it up really quick.
No, it's, you know, I just believe that they're saying that at the time and place of importation. So they want to apply this, you know, this tax as soon as it comes in. So that's why they needed to have marshals, you know, there on the pier to be able to apply those taxes as whoever was paying for those goods, they had to pay the tax.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's go on.
Okay, go ahead.
Provided that none of the said duties shall be applied to any other purpose than the discharge of the interest or principal of the debts contracted on the faith of the United States for supporting the war, agreeably to the resolution of the 16th day of December last, nor be continued for a longer term than 25 years, and provided that the collectors of the said duties shall be appointed by the states within which their offices are to be respectively exercised, but when so appointed, shall be amenable and removable by the United States in Congress assembled alone. And in any case, any state shall not make such appointment within 1 month after notice given for that purpose. The appointment may be made by the United States in Congress assembled.
Okay. Keep going, unless you got a question on that.
That was a mouthful. I was just reviewing it really quickly to see if I did. I'm going to continue.
Okay.
That it be further recommended to the several states to establish for a term limited to 25 years and to appropriate to the discharge of the interest and principal of the debts contracted on the faith of the United States for supporting the war, substantial and effectual revenues of such nature as they may judge most convenient for supplying their respective proportions of $1,500,000 annually, exclusive of the aforementioned duties. You know, back then, that had to be a huge amount of money.
Sure.
Okay. Which proportion shall be fixed and equalized from time to time according to the rule which is or may be prescribed by the Articles of Confederation, and in case the revenues established by any state shall at any time yield a sum exceeding its actual proportion, the excess shall be refunded to it. And in case the revenues of any state shall be found to be deficient, the immediate deficiency shall be made up by such state with as little delay as possible, and a future deficiency guarded against by an enlargement of the revenues established, provided that until the rule of the Confederation can be carried into practice, the proportions of the said $1,500,000 shall be as follows, viz. New Hampshire, $52,708, Massachusetts, $224,427, Rhode Island, $32,318, Connecticut, $132,091, New York, $128,243, New Jersey, $83,358, Pennsylvania, $205,189, Delaware, $22,443, Maryland, $141,517, Virginia, $256,487, North Carolina, $109,006, South Carolina, 96,183, and Georgia, 16,030. I just want to remark here, this is apparently what they've done is they've apportioned this obligation by
population. Correct. Because so I actually have the population numbers right here in front of me. Let's just look at Delaware. Right. they're basically saying you need to pay us $22,000. And at the time of the ratification of the Constitution, at the first census, 1790, they had 59, almost 60,000. So this was basically one-third, a little over one-third of a dollar per person.
Right. And Delaware isn't Delaware the smallest state, or is it Rhode Island?
So,
because Rhode Island had more people.
Yeah, Delaware was the least populated. Rhode Island had 68,000, and so I think that there was an assessment of value, because when you look at Georgia. Georgia had 16,000 assigned to it, and Georgia, as a population, as I go across here, they basically had almost the same population as Delaware.
So what I don't understand, help me understand here, this difference. It's only $6,000, but there's a difference here.
I honestly think that it has more to do with not just the population, but when we actually look at it, it's probably this assessed value, because they were looking at property value. So Georgia may have just been shacks. They didn't have they may not have had any real convention centers or big halls and that type of thing. Georgia was a penal colony, right?
Right.
Okay. In some respects, I mean, everybody down there was indentured servants. And that's how it got started out. So they didn't come with a lot of money and investments. It was a strategic colony that was created by the crown to create a buffer to say, we're going to put you in this place. And maybe they told them, well, you know, you guys are going to be our first line of resistance if Spain decided to come up and attack us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to be in a high risk and you're not going to get much because you only get, I believe they only got 10 acres instead of 100.
Okay.
So they got 1/10 of what everybody else was getting. And that's because these guys were criminals. They committed crimes. So, but it was still the standard 7-year indentured service. And it wasn't a commercial endeavor. So there wasn't money going into Georgia. This was just an opportunity to actually be out in the air instead of being in some prison cell.
Right. So one more question.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you looked at Delaware, you looked at what they owe and the population, and and a third of a dollar.
A third of a dollar, correct.
That doesn't even, I mean, what goes through my mind is, hey, you know, everyone pays a third of a dollar, and Delaware can discharge our part of this debt. And by the way, I forgot my thought. I'm trying to put this together. Let's go on. Yep. It'll come back to me. Okay?
So they kind of talk about what they're doing here. So go ahead.
Okay. The said last mentioned revenues to be collected by persons appointed as aforesaid, but to be carried to the separate credit of the states within which they shall be collected. That an annual account of the proceeds and application of all the aforementioned revenues shall be made out and transmitted to the several states, distinguishing the proceeds of each state of the specified articles, and the amount of the whole revenue received from each state, together with the allowances made to the several officers employed in the collection of the said revenues.
Yeah. So, go ahead. So
one of
the things I wanted to actually put in here is what would have happened if they were mindful of the paper currency and the devaluation of it that was occurring at the time. What would have happened if they said, and the specie you need to pay in is gold, that this many ounces of, had they laid it out by the measure of, we need this many ounces of gold, then it would have actually shut the door on their ability to actually play the games like what Rhode Island had done.
Huh. So, dumb question then. Why didn't they?
Because as we looked at the one before, they didn't have the authority to create coin and to regulate the value thereof. Each state regulated their own currency.
Oh, my goodness. So
remember when we went through the ratifications last year, the ratification debates, how many times it was brought up. So that's it, folks. We're out of time. But I'll just close on this. The ratification debates were peppered. I mean, literally peppered throughout them regarding the lack of value of the paper species that all of these states were using and how they were all scoundrels in devaluing their own currency and the need for coins and a stable currency under the new Constitution. With that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.